This is Content Content, a monthly podcast featuring the people behind the content. I'm Ed Marsh. This is episode number 5, recorded August 1st, 2015. Today's guest is Marsha Reefer Johnston, a former technical writer whose book, Word Up, was named one of Indie Reader's best books of 2014. Currently, the book has an impressive 5-star rating with 140 reviews on Amazon. Congratulations and welcome, Marsha.
I'm thrilled to be here, Ed.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. How's things in Portland today?
Portland is a happy place.
Nice. Nice. Good to hear.
How about New York? You're in New York today, right?
Yes, right outside in New Jersey. Beautiful Clifton, New Jersey.
Ah.
It's about 90 degrees out here today. It's a little drier than it has been, which is nice, but nice sunny day here in North Jersey, right in the middle of the summer.
It's just about the same here.
Excellent. Excellent. Love Portland.
Yes.
Marsha and I met at the LavaCon 2013 conference, chatted for about 20 minutes, and then became friends.
And I would love to jump in here with a quick note.
Mm.
We, in fact, owe our friendship to Twitter, as you may recall.
That's true.
We were both at LavaCon tweeting away. And
that's right.
I do not think we'd be having this conversation right now if not for Twitter. Because I didn't know you, and we
right.
would have passed in the halls, never thought to reach out and say hi, but your tweets just delighted me. They made me smile. They were helpful. They were witty. They were fun. And I thought, I want to meet this guy. So I tweeted you and said exactly
right.
that. I said, hey, I want to meet you. I'm in this session. Maybe in the break, let's look for each other in the halls. And something that you tweeted back, I think you must have said, oh, well, I'm in the same session. And I looked in the row ahead of me, and I researched this so I can tell you the exact date and the exact tweet that I sent you, October 22nd, 2013. This is what I tweeted to you. I'm reading it now. I might be sitting right behind you. Next time, put a photo of the back of your head in your profile. I dare you to turn around. And I tell you, my heart was beating because I thought, I'm either an idiot. This guy is like nowhere in the room. And you were exactly the guy I was looking at. And you turned around and we
That's
both
hilarious.
Laughed. And it was just such a sweet moment. So thank you, Twitter.
That's
Thanks
so funny.
To you. I have Ed in my life.
That's so funny. I remember that now. I remember, you know, I didn't even think about that. I remember meeting you in the big hall, and I remember talking to you there for a long time. Now I remember that whole story. That's so funny. In the back of my head. That's awesome. Yeah. So thank you, Twitter. We, like many people I've met in person, I've been first introduced to them via Twitter. So, it's a great device for everybody to get out there and get their name and get to know some new people. When I was starting the podcast, I reached out to two people I knew to see if it was a viable idea. When both responded positively and quickly, I was on my way. Marsha was one of those two people, so I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled to have her on the show. For the record, the other person was my first guest, Sharon Burton. Marsha's second book, You Can Say That Again, 750 Redundant Phrases to Think Twice About, came out earlier this year and is also highly rated on Amazon. We'll talk about some of her favorite words and phrases later on. On top of that, she's a managing editor of the Content Marketing Institute on topics related to content strategy and intelligent content. She's also a frequent tweeter, as we've just mentioned, at Marsha R. Johnston. So, Marsha, why don't you tell us a little bit about your tech writing background and how you moved into content strategy and marketing?
Well, you know, I had to smile to hear you call me a former technical writer because in my heart, I am still and will always be a tech writer. That profession is just part of my sense of identity. But in fact, it's not so much exactly what I do anymore, and it's really hard even to put a label on what I do, but I have, as you say, moved into content strategy, and even now, marketing. I never studied it, I never prepared for it, but we find ourselves taking paths we never expected, right?
Absolutely.
So I want to answer your question by identifying three career turning points. And each of those turning points for me has a face. One was Karen Szymanski, two was Scott Abel, and three was actually the CMI team, the Content Marketing Institute team, Joe Pulitzi, Robert Rose, Michelle Lynn, and a core of fantastic people that I work with now. So I just will quickly give you what happened at each of those turning points, and that's how I got from tech writing to where I am. Karen Szymanski was my first turning point. I was in grad school as a writer, a creative writer. I had never heard the word technical and the word writing next to each other, even in the same sentence, until I had my master's degree and was looking around, what am I going to do? I knew I didn't want to teach. And Karen had just put this technical writing internship up on the board at my English department. And I thought, oh, that sounds fascinating, and I need something to do. I fell in love with it. She brought me on board at Magnavox CATV. It was a cable equipment manufacturer out in Syracuse, New York area. I fell in love with tech writing, and I did it for 25 years, mostly as an independent contractor.
Okay.
And along came Scott Abel a few years ago at an SDC conference in Rochester. And he was sitting out at a little table in the hallway to anyone who would listen, talking about how tech writers have to change. This little thing called social media is going to roll you over if you don't jump on board. And he and I, from that point on, were in touch. He called me in from time to time to do projects. And he kept talking about how tech writers need to think about marketing differently, how they need to think of themselves as marketers. And he really was a pivot point for me in getting into some opportunities that led me to the CMI gig that I have now. So thank you, Scott, and thank you, Karen. Scott put me in touch with the folks at CMI. Now I'm there working still as an independent contractor and loving it and really finding that TechCom was a great preparation. In fact, for just about anything you want to do, right? We were just talking about tech writers wear so many hats. You can practically choose the path you want to go. So here I am doing content marketing, but using my TechCom background and all the things that I learned there to bring extra value to them. I'll stop there unless you have more specifics.
No, that's great. It's an interesting path, and it's nice to see that you have those people as kind of checkpoints to see how your career pivoted. It's interesting to hear.
Well, you have to know every one of us who's quote unquote made it, we owe people who helped us get there, right? You have to have people like that in your life, and I think most people listening probably can picture their own faces and turning points.
Yeah, I remember the person who I interviewed for another job. She was a recruiter, and I was going for this job, and she said, oh, you'd be perfect for this this new job as a technical writer. And I'm like, what's a technical writer? And I had no idea. Yes. And I got the job, and you know, here I am 21 years later. So you know, not the only person I can think of along the way, but that's definitely the first person that comes to mind. So
she was your Karen Szymanski stuff.
Exactly. Took care of me.
You know what?
Set my career along the right path.
Yes, and thank you to all of those people in all of our lives.
Indeed.
Before we leave this question, I would like to encourage listeners on this topic of I think of it in terms that Kyla Banks, a 13-year-old girl who gave the keynote at OzCon recently here in Portland. That's the open source conference. Her talk was called Undefinable Me. And I think what you and I are talking about here is that, yeah, we may call ourselves tech writers, we may call ourselves content marketers, we may go by any number of labels, but in fact, most of us human beings are really undefinable. We do all kinds of things professionally. You are a brewer of beer, you are a director of marching bands, you are a caster of pods. You really do so many things, it's hard to have one label really fit you. And she does such a great job of describing what it's like to be undefinable. She's fabulous. Her keynote talk got picked up by MTV News. People can Google it and see it's a 9-minute video. It's fabulous.
And we will put that in the show notes so people know right where to get the link. So thanks for that. So you decided to pivot from being a tech writer when Scott said it's time to pivot, and you kind of just followed his lead. Is that how that worked out?
I'd say yes, that's pretty accurate. I've always been drawn to a sort of liberal arts approach to life. I had a liberal arts education. I just love learning. And I think that's something that most tech writers have in common, indeed, just a passion to learn things, a curiosity, how do things work? We may have strong skills in communication, but to be a tech writer, you have to also have a facility for understanding science, technology, whatever it is you're writing about. So that broad sense of curiosity, I think, is just part of what we all have. And Scott happened to throw some opportunities my way that nudged me toward marketing, and you kind of go where the opportunities are. So yeah,
right.
Here I am.
Right. Right. Okay. So along the lines there, you wrote a book. How did that come about, and where did you fit that in amongst everything else that you were doing?
Writing that book, and again, this book you're talking about is called Word Up, How to Write Powerful Sentences and Paragraphs and Everything You Build from Them. I just always had in me that desire. I remember when I was 9 years old, a friend of mine gave me an empty book, those blank books, you know. You flip through the pages, and I thought, wow, I'm going to write a book. And I just, problem was I had nothing to say, but I just had that desire. Do you remember there was a postage stamp back in the probably 1960s of a young girl on a magic carpet? And if you look closely, the magic carpet was a book.
Okay.
And I think it said something like, books take you places. And to me, books always just had that magic ability to transport people. And they're powerful. And so the thought of writing a book, I never thought I could get the attention of a publisher. But at this point, when anybody can publish, and I had a passion for writing, and the biggest thing that made me want to write it was that after 20 years of working as a professional writer and doing what I do and doing what I love, I heard time and time again people saying, wow, how did you do that? Oh, that's cool. I'm glad to know that. I would show them my tips, my tricks that to me were second nature. And it finally dawned on me, most people don't know these things that I know about writing, and there's a hunger for it. So,
oh, interesting.
I just had a ball. I spent 2 years, my husband and I pretty much together, most of our life went into that effort, and it was such a great, satisfying pleasure. And I really wanted to meet that hunger that I sensed was out there for how do you do what you do, but also making it a pleasure to read.
Yes, and it was a great read for sure. So thank you for sharing all of your knowledge over the years, and you must be proud of the result.
It's been one of the most satisfying things I've ever done, and I give my husband credit. I was so eager to get a book out there that I would have published something that would not have rated the way it has been rated. It would not get all the reviews and stars it has on Amazon. And he really reined me in and said, I know what you can do. And if you don't want to keep going, by all means, put it out there the way it is. But he really made me think hard and kept helping me get where it needed to be. And I'm so grateful to him for that.
Well, that's interesting. That's well, good for him and good for you.
So anybody out there wanting to write a book and you think you're ready, think again. You have another year, another year to go.
So what was it like for you then to go from someone who kind of wrote technical communication and kind of like an anonymous author to being someone on kind of the other side and out there promoting yourself and being out front and being the person instead of just an anonymous collection of people writing writing documentation?
It was head spinning. It still is. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation and other people have been inviting me to do webinars and I've been invited to go speak at conferences, and it really stuns me. Like, whose life am I living? And honestly, when I set out to write the book, I didn't have in mind to do all these things. That wasn't my goal. The book was my goal. That was my love. My labor of love was to produce a book that would make a difference for people. And all these other things that have followed have really take my breath away.
That's awesome. So, who would you say that Word Up, who was your audience and who was your user that you wrote Word Up for?
Well, you know, I hadn't thought of it in these terms until just today. And this is what came to me. Do you know the story of the Velveteen Rabbit?
Vaguely, yes. I think I read that when I was a kid.
So this boy has a stuffed rabbit, and he loves it to pieces, literally. It just gets shabbier and shabbier the more he hugs on it and, you know, kisses it and rubs it. And it finally is just, its buttons are falling off, its seams are splitting. The thing is just falling apart because it's been loved so hard. And eventually all that love turns this shabby stuffed animal into a real rabbit. So for me, I kind of have that image, but the rabbit is Strunken White's Elements of Style. If you saw my, in fact, if you could show it on.
I almost just spit my water out. Taking a sip of water.
Well, I wish I could show on your podcast my copy of my college edition of, I mean, when I was in college, the edition I owned and still have, it's falling apart. It's shabby. That book I absolutely loved. It's a style guide for writers. And it's the people who have loved their Strunken White to death like I have that I wrote this book for, because they love language. They love the pleasure that well-crafted words can give the writer and the reader, but they also love learning about how language works. So that's my audience.
Interesting. So when Indie Reader wrote their review, they noted that Word Up is a reference manual providing pertinent information and instruction on basic grammar rules without the fuzzy, stale aftertaste most literary references manuals leave behind. Was that your goal when you were writing it?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Nice. So they nailed it pretty well then, huh?
That would have been my dream summary right there. And it was a thrill for me that people responded that way.
Interesting. So going back to your social media experience, and you got it in so early, how is that? Has it affected sales? Have you gotten a positive result as a result of being out there on Twitter? How does it tie together?
I wish I knew the answer to that one, Ed. I collect some metrics on my website, and I follow on Amazon as well as I can the data that they show on book sales. Okay. But it's really hard to tell if there's a direct correlation between my social media activities or my conference speaking or webinars, podcasts, things like that. I can't directly correlate spikes in sales to events. So
okay.
I just sort of have to take it on faith that somehow there's a correlation. I wish I could show data. But in fact, it's been fun doing all this social media stuff. So I guess I just kind of enjoy doing it on its own merits and don't worry too much about whether it's directly leading people to buy the book. Although if you're listening and you haven't bought the book, hey, go to Amazon and show me a spike. I would love to have a story to tell.
That's it. We'll have to see if there's a spike in the next month or so after this podcast is released. And of course, we'll have a link to your two books in our show notes on edmarsh.com. So moving on to You Can Say That Again, I do have to say I'm guilty of some of the redundancies in your book, but many of them, like ATM machine, that they drive me crazy. What prompted you to write You Could Say That Again?
Well, it is a book full of redundancies. It's basically one long list with an essay tacked on at the beginning. It's a short little fun book. Short little. Hey, there is one. There's a redundancy. In fact,
nice.
What I just did, I caught myself saying short little. That is what prompted me to write the book. My husband, Ray, and I, we both love language. We're both very tuned. He especially has always been attuned to those kind of things. Redundancies in our own speech, posters, bulletin boards, signs you see on the bus, TV, everywhere you go, you run into them. And I generate them out of my own mouth, just like I did. We're all guilty of it. What Ray and I had been doing for years was making a sport of it. And at one point I started listing it. And I should give a hat tip, by the way, to techwhirl.com and Connie Giordano and Al Martin. They invited me to do a column for a while, and they are the ones responsible for that blog post where I did my very first list of redundant phrases. They got me started putting that stuff into written form, and I got addicted to it. I just kept the list kept growing and growing and growing, and now it's a book, it was totally for fun. And I'll share a few examples with you, if you like, of my favorites.
Yes, for sure.
Because until you hear them, you kind of go, oh, what's she talking about? So here, just here are a handful of them. Incredible to believe. Is that nice. Any different from incredible?
Right.
What, incredible to eat? You know, what other kind of incredible is there? Here's another one. Round in shape. Small details. Small details.
Wow.
Okay, so here are a couple. You mentioned acronyms when you said ATM machine, which of course stands for automatic teller machine, right?
Right.
So essentially, ATM machine is automatic teller machine machine.
Machine machine.
So here's one for you. What does BFF stand for?
Best friend forever.
Best friend forever. So here's one I saw on Twitter. BFF 4, the number 4, Eva.
Oh,
so it's basically saying best friend forever, forever. And now my favorite, that's... I'll end with my favorite, is RAS syndrome. And RAS, do you know what that one stands for?
I don't know that one.
Redundant acronym syndrome.
Oh, gee.
And I owe that one to one of the many people, and I'm sorry I don't remember his name, but one of the many people who jumped into this game with me and sent me via Twitter, via Facebook, via my blog, sent me their redundant phrases to contribute to the book. A lot of people got in, and it turned into sort of a crowdsourced project, and so I never knew about that one until one of the gang contributed it. So I have lots of people to thank for that little book.
That's great. That's great. And I love the illustrations in there. Like the one of challah bread is really hilarious. Best friend forever. I love them. And actually one I don't see
yes.
That drives me crazy as an automotive is VIN number.
Ooh.
VIN is vehicle identification number.
You know,
you don't hear it that often, but it's pretty funny when people say it like that.
And I think I might have to add content to the list. Although it's not truly redundant because it's meaningful. I love your title, by the way. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. It came as a result of a lot of research into finding what URLs were available to buy.
Yes.
So that came out, and content.info came out as a result of lots of protracted Google searching to find what sites were available. So that's pretty funny.
Well, I love that it captures your spirit of creativity, a little bit of lightheartedness. It's perfect for what you're doing. It fits very well. And hey, by the way, if you want to optimize for the word content, hello. So, and Ed, I want to thank you, by the way, for acknowledging the illustrations in, you can say that again. That's been my favorite thing about that book. And I want to give credit
to my son,
Brian Paulson.
Oh, wow.
Who did those illustrations for me. And the one you mentioned, Challah Bread, is, I think, my favorite illustration of them all. But that was a pure pleasure working with him.
And, oh, I can imagine.
And while I'm at it, I have to also acknowledge my daughter, Elizabeth Paulson, who has been one of my great sounding boards all through my writing effort. And if you have read my book, Word Up, and the very last chapter in that book, which is called Decisions, you know about my kids, Brian and Elizabeth, and our adventure in Guatemala. So I just had to get that word in there about my wonderful kids.
Nice. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your trip to Guatemala with them?
I want to leave that for people to read about in the book. It is my favorite chapter.
Sounds good.
Of all. And I love all those chapters.
All right. So everyone go to Marcia's Amazon site, get the books, download them, buy them, get them on your Kindle, and hear this great story about her family. While we're still on, you can say that again. Do you want to tell us what a malaphor is?
I would be happy to. And in fact, I just came to know about malaphors fairly recently. It's a different thing from what I do in the redundancy list. A malaphor is its own kind of animal, and I learned about malaphors from Dave Hatfield, who has a website called malaphors.com. He calls himself the Malaphor King. I absolutely love the things he publishes. Every week or two or so, he puts out a short post on a malaphor that someone has submitted, heard on the radio, uttered him or herself. In fact, I have six of my own that I've submitted to him that I said or heard. What a malaphor is, it's two or more idioms smushed together unintentionally. The brain just coughs them up. For example, this is the one that Dave Hatfield has on the top of his website. It's the cream of the cake. So it's two idioms. The one, what two idioms do you pick up on there?
Cream of the crop.
Yes.
And takes the cake.
Takes the cake. No, right. You have to do a little bit of deconstructing. And
right.
And so
okay.
It's so much fun to read these things that people send in. So I'll tell you two other examples. This is one that I overheard and submitted, and he published. And then he always does a little analysis of it. And his analyses are just delightful. So one is, I dropped the boat on that one.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
That's a conflation of I dropped the ball on that one.
I dropped a ball, right.
And what's the boat one?
Don't
rock the boat.
Maybe.
And so he sort of does this whole analysis of why someone's brain might have done that exact short circuit and how that comes to be, and kind of a peek into what happened in slow motion in those neurons. It's really fun to read about. And then the other one, this is one that I came up with unwittingly myself, and it sort of slowly dawned on me that, hey, that's not quite right. Don't let any moss grow under your feet.
Oh my God.
And it sounded perfectly fine until I sort of heard the echo, and I thought, wait a minute, that's not how it goes. And so can you unpack that one?
A rolling stone gathers no moss and don't... Oh God, what about... I wouldn't...
You're so close. That's for, one of them.
For the sake of dead air, I have no idea. Don't... let's see. Walk on a wild... I don't know.
So
I don't know.
What I said was don't let any moss... grow under your feet, and it should have been grass. Don't let any grass grow under your feet. But I got them mushed together in my head. Wow. It's a brain tickler, isn't it?
Yes.
They're fun little
more
puzzles.
I can think about right now. That's crazy.
So they're really fun puzzles, and I encourage people to subscribe to that blog, malifors.com. He will not spam you. They don't come often, and they're just delightful.
That sounds fantastic. I have to check that site out as soon as we get done recording. That's good. Okay. Marcia, I want to talk to you about your move to content marketing and strategy.
Yes.
But first, let me tell you about content.info, which we were just talking about.
Yes.
This is a place for content strategists, user experience designers, technical writers, and visual designers to come for all of their daily news. There's currently 40 different content-related feeds, including STC chapters, amazing design and content strategy websites, blogs from thought leaders in all fields, and of course, the Content Marketing Institute and Marcia's blog. When you hover over each link, a summary appears so you can decide if it's right for you. If you are a content creator, please send us your feed. There's a link on content.info where you can submit your site. The links go to your site so you won't miss any hits or metrics or ad impressions. I created the site for the content community. Please check it out, content.info. Marcia, let's talk about your current work with the Content Marketing Institute. What is intelligent content and what does the CMI do?
And CMI, of course, stands for Content Marketing Institute. So
right.
To your first question, what is intelligent content? I need to give credit to Anne Rockley, who 20-some years ago really created the term, I believe, coined the term intelligent content. And forgive me, anyone, if I'm leaving anybody out who was part of that effort. But Anne is really the one that most people point to as blazing that trail. And her definition has six parts.
I
want to read the definition. It's a hard one to get your head around. And after I read it, if you want to know more, I have actually created a set of web blog articles that addresses each of the six parts in depth with examples. But here's the definition. It is content that is, number one, structurally rich, number two, semantically categorized, number three, therefore automatically discoverable, number four, reusable, number five, reconfigurable, and number six, adaptable, or to use the more common term, adaptive. Most of us heard of adaptive content these days. So those six parts of the definition are each rich topics in themselves. And if you want to dig in more, I would point you to on the CMI blog, the contentmarketinginstitute.com blog, and they have a page called What is Intelligent Content? And from that page, you can click the links to each one of those six components of the definition and find a whole discussion about it. And of course, Anne Rockley has written the book, let me get the name right. I have it right here handy at all times. It's called Managing Enterprise Content, a Unified Content Strategy. And it's now in its second edition. And that really is where everybody turns as the seminal work on intelligent content. And technical writers have been exploring this whole topic area for the last 15 years or so. Marketers right. are beginning to turn their heads and say, hey, there's something there that we could learn from. So to segue into the second part of your question, what does CMI do? CMI has for 8 years now, I believe, carved out a niche and a following of people who do content marketing, which is a publishing model. They're putting content out there to help people to build an audience. And I won't go too much into that. There's all kinds of great information on the CMI website. But last fall, CMI purchased the Intelligent Content Conference from Ann Rockley okay. and Scott Abel.
Oh.
Because Joe Polizzi and Robert Rose, the sort of the leading bad boys of CMI, Joe was giving a talk. In fact, I think both of them were giving a talk at the Intelligent Content Conference. And they got into some conversations with Scott Abel and Ann Rockley saying, hey, you guys are doing some cool stuff with using technology in powerful ways to scale your content in really smart, reusing content, all those things we've been talking about in TechCon for years. They're saying, we're not doing that in marketing. We're wasting all kinds of resources. We have all kinds of opportunities to do things smarter. So CMI is now, and the reason I'm involved, is that they're bringing in people who can address intelligent content and content strategy topics for the content marketing world and say, hey guys, you could be using technology in smarter ways. And you could be thinking more strategically. So there's a coming together of worlds that used to be separate, and I kind of was on that intersection point, and that's an exciting place to be.
Nice. So, okay, so why don't you tell us then what your role is as managing editor, or one of the managing editors mm-hmm. at Content Marketing Institute?
Last December, CMA hired me to manage a brand new blog, a separate blog called the Intelligent Content Blog. And mm-hmm. until last month, so for about 6 months, I was either writing myself or working with other authors, people I knew in content strategy and intelligent content kind of experts, many of them from TechCom, working with those guys to put two blog posts a week out on that blog, which belonged to Content Marketing Institute. But it was mm-hmm. not part of their main blog. It was a separate blog up until last month. And that was what they hired me to do. So my role was very much defined as the manager of that intelligent content blog. They have just recently decided to migrate all of that blogging energy into their main blog. So that blog still exists at the moment, but all of the new blog posts on content strategy and intelligent content related topics are integrated into their main blog, because what they discovered was they really want to serve the same audience, their content marketing audience, but bring these new topics to them. So that is what I'm now doing, is working with their main blog director and bringing those new kinds of blog post topics to their audience. It's a stretch. It is a stretch. And it's very exciting. There's a lot of interest.
Oh, good. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Seems like overall people are paying more and more attention to content. Are you finding that? And what do you think, if you do, why do you think people are paying more attention to content these days?
Well, I would say because that's how businesses are going to succeed these days. Is they're going to succeed or fail based on whether people are finding them on Google, whether they have followers. And so you almost, this may be an exaggeration, but not much. You almost have to be a publisher in addition to whatever else your business is about. If you want to reach your target audience, unless your target audience are people who are out taking walks and reading telephone polls for lost cats, and they're not even looking on the internet, you know, then forget what I said. But chances are, whatever you're selling, you need to reach people online in some way. And the way to do that is to build an audience of followers with content that they care about, that's helpful to them, and that's not sales content. It is what magazine publishers typically have done all through the decades, writing articles that people will find interesting and helpful that have nothing to do with your products. That's what content marketing is. And if you're in business, you're either doing it or you're sliding.
Interesting.
And I would like to give credit for all of this that I'm saying. I didn't come up with this. I'm learning as I go, and I'm learning a great deal from the folks at Content Marketing Institute. Joe Polizzi, for example, and Robert Rose both have a number of books out. And Joe's latest book coming out in September is called Content Inc. And he goes into detail on this model of how businesses can operate on a content-first model. I'll leave it at that.
Nice. Content first. We like to hear that these days. Yes. There's mobile first, and then there's content first. I'd like to think content drives how the mobile is designed. And I wish more people would think of it that way.
content first, actually.
Let's always think of content first, shall we? All right. Sold. So why don't you tell us, now that you're in a kind of a content marketing and content strategy role, how different is that from what your experience is in technical communication? And maybe if there's some of the parallels there, what can people from both sides learn from each other?
Well, I'll start by addressing the difference that I see and then the similarity. How's that?
Sounds good.
So the main difference, tech writers tend to be, in my experience, in the post-sale end of things. Would you agree with that?
I think that's increasingly changing, but for the most part, traditionally, I would say yes.
Traditionally. And that was my experience with almost all of the technical writing that I did, with the exception of white papers, which really are marketing heart. They're kind of a hybrid. A white paper is kind of a hybrid of explaining something technical, educating people. But in between the lines, it's really a sales, boosting the brand kind of thing. So the main difference that I see with content marketing and technical writing is content marketing really is truly, it belongs in the marketing world. It's part of building a brand. It's part of building a following. It's part of feeding. I hate to use this term because I think it's becoming kind of an outdated model, but marketers talk in terms of the funnel, where you're trying to gather sales leads, and there's this whole step-by-step process of bringing them into the funnel, they call it. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. Yeah, I've heard that.
So content marketing is a part of that. You want to gather people into your subscriber base and into your sales leads database. Technical writing has typically, traditionally been, once you get those people buying your product, you have to explain the product to them. And that's what technical communicators typically have done. Let me explain how to use this thing you just bought. So that is the main difference that I see. The thing that that I think they have in common, tech writing and content marketing, is that, and when I'm doing content marketing, I am still doing what I did in tech writing because I'm explaining things, I'm providing helpful information, I am doing what I can to understand my audience's information needs and to fill those needs, explaining things in terms they understand and in ways that they will value and want to keep coming back for more. And so at heart, content marketing is not trying to get somebody to buy something. It is about giving them information that they will find useful, answering their burning questions. That's what content marketers do. That's what tech writers have always done, answer people's burning questions. And to do that, you have to understand who they are, what those questions are, and what medium and what channel is going to be the best way of getting those answers to them. So if you're good at doing that stuff as a tech writer, you may want to choose a path into content marketing. Those are the skills that content marketers need.
Now, does content manage, I keep saying it wrong, Content Marketing Institute, are they primarily working on web-based content, or are they talking about content in general for all kind of marketing purposes, whether it's a magazine or a newsletter or stuff like that?
They talk about the gamut.
Okay.
Blogging, they do regular, every single day, there's at least one blog post. And I can tell you from behind the scenes that this team takes very seriously making their content valuable and high quality. There are a lot of people out there giving content marketing a bad name because they're just putting something out there every day. They may be stealing it. They may be just slapping up there whatever came out of their brains that moment. And so a lot of so-called content marketing isn't great. But at CMI, I really feel good about what they put on that blog post every day. There's a lot that goes into it. That's just one of the things they do. They put out white papers. They do research and put out original research that they make available for free. They put on a huge conference every year in Cleveland, the Content Marketing World Conference, now going into its fifth year, coming up in September. Over 3,000 people will be going there. It's going to be phenomenal. And of course, now they have the Intelligent Content Conference. They talk about print. They have a magazine called Chief Content Officer. They put out all kinds of content videos. They have a podcast called This Old Marketing, which I just think it's a hoot. Joe and Robert get on wherever they are in the world. They hook up for an hour every week and talk about marketing, and it's really fun. They're doing it all, and they're modeling what content marketers can do. They're doing content marketing for content marketing.
Well, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun working
there. It is really fun. I'm learning a lot.
Good.
Did I answer your question? I think I probably over-answered your question, but...
I think you did. I think there's, you know, some of those parallels there. Interesting to hear you talk about the people who aren't doing good content, you know, good content marketing. And I'm wondering if that's kind of like the old SEO people who, you know, used to spam you and say, oh, I can get you a million hits on Google. I wonder if some of those people have transferred to be an SEO person to a, quote, content marketing, unquote, person.
Yes, the black hat SEO. I suppose I've never heard the term black hat content marketing, but...
No, yeah, that's true.
I think that's an apt comparison.
So do you think that's making the CMI and your job more difficult because you have to rise above that?
Well, I think it's just out there. It's a reputation, not a reputation. It's a connotation that we are constantly aware of and want to correct to the extent that we have any influence over it. They model how to do it well, and they give people tips for how to do it well. And they make no bones about the fact that it takes time, it takes money, it takes talented people to do it well. I mean, the best comparison is magazine publishing. If you want to succeed in content marketing, it's like wanting to succeed with putting a magazine out. If you're putting out a magazine that has great content that people are loving, you're going to succeed with your magazine. If you're just putting a magazine out there every day because somebody said you should do it and there's not good stuff in there, I mean, that's what a lot of content marketers are doing, and that isn't going to work.
Interesting. Okay, why don't we just shift gears again? Sure. And recently you started up the Tighten This Challenge on your blog at writing.rocks. Can you tell us a bit more about this and what the response has been like to it?
I would love to do that. It's been a really fun experiment with what I keep hearing about gamification. And I kept thinking, well, that doesn't apply to me. But was it about 2 months ago, I just had this brainstorm. Actually, I should credit my husband because it came up as we were talking together, and he looked at me and he said, "You have to do that. You have to make a game out of that." I have been giving workshops for a couple years now on my approach to concise writing.
Right. Okay.
I don't seem to be really good at concise speaking, as you may have noticed, but I love helping people with tightening up their writing. And I give a workshop on that, and I have some tips that that I have been sharing with people. And it finally occurred to me, well, I could turn this into a game. So every week for the last 2 months, I have been posting a challenge sentence. And anybody can send one. Please, I would love to have people send me. Oh. If you come across a bloated sentence, as we all do every day, that's begging to be tightened, please send it to me. I am at Marcia, MARCIA_R_Johnston@me.com. And I post them. I invite people to send me in the comments to post their versions, their tightened versions. And then Ray and I each pick a winner. Often we disagree, so we kind of have a he said, she said version of the winner every week. And people have been jumping in, and apparently they seem to be having fun with it. And in fact, to answer your question about the response, I have doubled my number of subscribers in 2 months.
Wow.
I had been blogging
Wow.
for about 2 years, and I'll admit, I'm sort of an on-again, off-again blogger. So I really wasn't putting the energy in, but I doubled in 2 months the number of subscribers I had collected. I hate to use that word, but in 2 years. So yeah, it's been fun, and people love games. So tighten
True.
This.
True. So
join me. Join me at writing.rocks every week, and throw your own hat into the challenge ring.
Sounds good. I think I contributed to one. I have to pay attention to it a bit more.
Yes, you did.
I didn't. I don't believe what I put was too serious, and I think I kind of just wanted to leave it like that. So I'll have to come back to writing.rocks and see what when the next one I think is number 10. Maybe I'll throw my hat in the ring for that one as well.
I'll be looking for your hat.
Nice. I have many. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned in the beginning, we talked about going and meeting at LavaCon, meeting via Twitter, but you are active both presenting at conferences like Write the Docs and the Intelligent Content Conference, and it seems like you also attend a lot of conferences. Can you share maybe not your motivation, but why are you going to all these conferences, and what are you gaining from them that keeps you going all over the country into conference after conference?
Well, I guess I would say I started going to the conferences because I wanted people to know about my book.
Okay.
I think I approached this whole thing about speaking at conferences backwards. Many of the speakers that I meet, they write a book so that people will invite them to speak. I wrote a book because I wanted to write a book. I didn't especially want the spotlight. I didn't especially want to go up and be in front of an audience. But the invitations came, and I thought, well, this is an opportunity for people to learn about my book, so I want people to know about it. I love my book. It is, to me, something I want the world to know about, because I've heard time and time again what value people get there, what pleasure they get from it, and it's a great feeling to me to share it. And so my ulterior motive is to put the word out there and hope that people the book was meant for, I hope that they will find it. And I have to go out there and tell them about it for that to happen. But I have found that I love the conferences for their own sake. I meet great people like you. I have met a whole community of TechCom people through conferences. And now I'm also meeting people in other overlapping worlds. So Confab, for example, invited me to give a talk a few months ago, and I met a bunch of fantastic people there. I'm going to a conference in November, the American Translators Association, and that's going to be a whole new world, that a whole new community of people. So it's very enriching to me, these people that I meet and then stay in touch with and continue to learn and grow. And you never know where business opportunities will come from. You never know where your friendships will come from. It's a very rich and wonderful life. So I don't know how many conferences I will keep going to. It gets tiring. And how many do you go to a year? What would you say?
I think in general, I haven't really been to a lot of conferences. I think kind of every other year, I guess I go to a bigger conference. And once a year, I go to the STC Philly Metro Chapters Conference because it's nearby in Philadelphia. So I get to that every year, for the past 3 or 4 years. LavaCon 2013 was the last one I went, the big one I went to. And it turns out, if you've been following our friend TechCom Geek Mom, I'll be going to the Information Development World Conference in San Jose at the end of September.
Yes, you won the ticket. And hey, shout out to Danielle Villegas. Love your blog.
Yes. And her new business, Dare Communications. She was also on this podcast on episode number 3, I believe. That'll be in the show notes as well to link to that in case I got that number wrong. But yes, I'm very excited to have won admission to go out west, especially when it should be nice out there. Looking forward, I think it's kind of a different audience for me as well. So it'll be kind of out of my comfort zone. I'm looking to meeting some new people, like you said, you have, and meeting maybe, you know, someone like I met Marsha Reefer Johnston a few years ago.
You will enjoy Information Development World. I went last year, and it's huge value.
Oh, good. Are you going this year?
I will not be going this year. I've hit my max.
Okay. Understood. Okay. Well, on that note, you seem very, very busy. You're with your consulting and your books and your all your work and everything else you're doing. Oh, do you ever get a chance to unwind? I mean, what do you have anything? Do you have a concept of free time?
Well, my husband might give you a different answer. Actually, I do occasionally drag myself away from my corner here that I'm sitting in right now in front of my laptop, but this is where I spend most of my waking hours. I love all the things that I'm involved in. I love what I do for work. My husband will tell people that she'll tell you she's working, but it sure looks like play, and it feels that way to me. But he will come drag me by the elbow and make sure that I get outside and take walks. I do love to knit. You asked if I had hobbies. I like to knit. I have kind of a modular, we talk in TechCom about the modular approach to writing. I have a modular approach to knitting. I like to make small self-contained pieces. In fact, my favorite thing to make is a dishcloth. They're beautiful. They're small. Oh, nice. You can easily do one in a sitting while you're watching a movie. but you know,
is that one?
Go ahead.
Is that one of your pieces on the wall behind you?
I did not make that. A friend of mine sent that to me.
No,
it's a quilted piece. I have done some quilting, and I used to love to read, and I look forward to having time to do more reading. That's one of one of my goals, is to simplify my work life, and we're getting there. But at the moment, the opportunity to jump in and do all of the wonderful work with the CMI group these last 6 months took a lot of my time, and I loved every minute of it. So no regrets.
Fantastic.
No regrets.
Awesome. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Marcia, for sharing your passion and your insight and your career path. Very interesting where you've been touching on many different aspects of the content world. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your Saturday afternoon with us. Actually, it's not. Is it afternoon there yet?
You're
still 2 hours behind.
It is now.
Okay.
We just crossed over.
Great. Why don't you remind us of all the places that we can find you?
Well, of course, writing.rocks. That's, I think you get there by www.writing.rocks. There's no .com after it. The rocks is
nice.
It. And I just love that. Love that, love that. Such fun. And my email address I will give again. That is Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A _R_ Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N .com. Sorry, @me.com. There we go. And I'm on Twitter @MarciaRJohnston. And anything else you want to know, well, I'm on LinkedIn. Shoot me a note and be happy to connect.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Marcia. This was a pleasure. I was, I tweeted this morning that I was excited about preparing for the show. So thank you again for reminding me about the joke about the back of my head photo. And thanks again for taking your time today.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Ed.
Awesome. So you can find me on Twitter at Ed Marsh. You can also find me and this podcast and all the prior episodes at edmarsh.com. And of course, don't forget content.info. And of course, you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Please also like us there and write a review. I, of course, checked last night and we don't have enough reviews yet to have a rating. But you're all writers. Please give us a good review. Well, give us a review. If there's something you don't like, hey, I'd like to hear about it so we can make it better for the next show. So until then, thank you again, Marcia. Thank you all for listening. Have a great day. Enjoy the rest of your summer.